On In The Zone 164, we look back at a disappointing loss to Sydney, but look ahead to elimination football time. We've got the Phoenix Awards to wrap up and rumours of Ramon to roar. In a new segment, well, that's a mystery. You'll just have to listen on through, but get ready for it. And then New Zealand footy rounds out the pod with talk of Gordie v Hudson and under 20 pre-World Cup friendlies. All that, but no box on In The Zone 164. This is In The Zone 164. We are back again. Thank you for the outpouring of grief on the forums. I think there were about four posts saying, you know, it's a minor shame that you guys are leaving.
I think it was a bit of trolling as well.
Yeah.
I think the overriding factor was that we're better than having to work, but not by much.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. When I say outpouring of grief, just to be clear, I am being facetious.
I think the sarcasm radar on the forums blew out at some stage.
It did, yeah. Anyway, but we've got to, you've still got to put up with this for a little while. You don't have to. You can just turn off. But if you're listening, well, we're still here. Let's have a chat about our game versus Sydney, which is one I'd rather not talk about too much, to be honest. It was a very disappointing affair all around. Again, we just failed to weather that first 15 minutes. The missing of the penalty was just dire, and Ernie made light of it at the awards night the other night, and I suppose that's all you can do. But it's so disappointing to see us. Battle so hard in their first quarter hour, go behind, and then we were just in the toilet, really.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think our performance was bad at all, but a couple of individual mistakes has cost us the last few weeks, and it cost us the game. Obviously, Rowley missing the penalty. You know, if you score that, the game probably changes a little bit. Playing from front is probably a bit easier, especially against an Arnold side who's generally usually quite sound defensively, or at least has pretty good structure defensively. Very similar to, I guess, to the 3-0 game against them not too long ago, where we coughed up some early goals and they just sat in the second half and tried to absorb the pressure. They did so to an extent, but I kind of got the feeling that if we'd got another one maybe with 10 minutes to go, we might have then gone on to get a winner, but it never quite eventuated, and it was incredibly disappointing. But I guess, you know, Sydney are a good side, and sometimes you just sort of accept that they came out on top and we didn't.
That's very philosophical.
I mean, there's been a big outpouring of angst after this game.
Do you think we can go on and win the league now?
I didn't. Well,
you did. I'll go back and find the quotes if you want.
I said there's a chance we could, but still a chance. It just is, it's a lot harder now not being in the top two.
No, but I think, setting aside the positionings, the standings, earlier in the season, I felt like we could beat anybody, and I don't now.
Don't you?
No. I think Sydney have got the wood on us comprehensively in both of the last two games. They've never really looked at risk of losing to us.
I'm more inclined to write off the 3-0 and say, well, we had half a squad, and you don't think you can read too much into that.
But as you just said, the result and the performance in the game where we had our full squad, it was practically identical. Having those players back didn't make any difference.
Yeah, but I don't think we were played off the park or anything like that. You know, sometimes you take your chances and sometimes you don't, and that was one of the games where we haven't, and we've probably had a few too many of those more recently.
How many chances do you recall us missing?
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not certain that Janjetovic had to do a huge amount of work. I think we had some good possession. We had the ball in the attacking third, but to me it looked like we just struggled to break it down. And it's a problem we've had since the Asian Cup break, that when teams get ahead or are playing for a draw and just pack the back half of the field, we don't look like we have the ability to be incisive and create an actual chance.
Yeah, I don't recall Janjetovic having to make much of a save. And Sydney put two past us in the first half and then we're on cruise control for the rest of the game. And it was very reminiscent of the previous game against them where, you know, they went ahead and then just cruised through. The difference was we did have, you know, we had a little bit of a stronger squad, so we pulled one back and they only scored a couple instead of steaming on to score a third. But I don't look at the league now and think we are a match for any team. And it's a real shame that we've gone that way instead of the other.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I said probably maybe 6 weeks ago that we're probably the third best team, and that was when we were sort of up near the top. But I thought how the draw had looked, how we'd gone in the draw, we're definitely coming into a tough back end of the season. And I kind of assumed in the back of my mind we'd probably go back to sort of third. which is essentially where we've finished. You know, I think Melbourne's easily the best side, and think Sydney's not probably not too far behind them, and I think it's us and Adelaide. And when you are that side, you can beat anyone, but it's just not as frequent as you hope or you want. You know, if you're the best side, you usually beat everyone. But yeah, I think we've still got a chance of getting to the final. It's probably about, it's been a chance that we've had, I think, ever. But I'm not necessarily convinced we'll do it. But I think we've still got a fairly decent chance of doing it.
Never has a man had a fence so far up his ass. It's ridiculous.
Why?
Well, hold on. Let's just recap what you've said there. The team that finishes first is usually better than the other teams.
Well, yeah, sometimes.
Good call. The team that finishes third can often win games against good teams, but sometimes doesn't.
Yeah, but
what
I think...
What a fantastic statement of truth that is.
Right, okay. But if we go back to, you know, when we had our great run, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was, we finished fourth. But no one ever really thought that we would ever win an away game.
Aha, well, this is my point, right? This is my point. Earlier in the season, you'd have given us an even or better than even chance of winning a game against Melbourne Victory or Sydney or Adelaide. Yeah, earlier in the season, you'd have said, we can go there and win, or they can come here, we can win. You don't say that now. We've got manifestly less competitive as the season has gone on. And you're going to say, well, I knew we were going to be third or fourth, and look, we're third or fourth. So look, my predictions were genius. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm making is that we're used to compete against these sides. Now we don't. Now we can't. We can't win the league.
But what's changed then?
Well, I don't know. I'm just highlighting the fact that there has been a change.
We've played harder sides in the second half of the season?
No, because we beat Melbourne Victory earlier in the season. We played these tough teams earlier on and we're more competitive against them. So I don't know what has changed, but something has definitely changed. Whether our style of attacking play earlier in the season caught them off guard and now they've worked us out, or whether we have tinkered with things at our end and we're just not as good. You know, you look at, for example, you know, putting Louis Fenton in midfield. You know, that's just, I thought Louis played perfectly well, but I think it's just a strange shuffle around to do at this stage of the season. So I don't know what has caused the change, but I look at the league now and I go, yeah, well, we are where we are. And that's probably, you know, we might win this game maybe, or this game coming up, or we, you know, we could quite easily go out now. Whereas earlier in the season, I had a real sense that we could just go on and take on anybody.
Oh, no, I don't think we should be scared of any team we play. I think, you know, on previous seasons, we're far more likely to do it.
We're definitely better than previous seasons. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, which is the thing I take heart in is we have beaten Victory in the past away. We have beat Sydney away. And so I don't see why we can't do it again. It's certainly going to be still a long shot, but I don't think we want to write off. I'm not going to write off the season just yet.
Yeah, I think the shot has got longer, and I don't know why, but it is the fact. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it is the best season the Phoenix have ever had. We've played the best football the Phoenix have ever played. We have the best squad the Phoenix have ever had, I think. But it's still just tinged with disappointment a bit from me, because we just aren't as good as we promised to be.
It would have been interesting, and you know, it's all conjecture, how we would have looked without that Asian Cup break if we'd kept that momentum and been able to, you know, keep going. We could easily have challenged first if we played like that, but it was almost like the other teams reevaluated what we were doing and found a way to beat it. But or we lost form. We haven't created as many chances. Certainly some of the lower teams have gone out of their way to play a pretty cynical and defensive game to stop us playing. And once the better teams have seen that, they know if they get a goal or two up, they can just kick us and park a bus. You know, and it's not pretty football when they do that, but it's been proven to beat us. And I'm not sure it would have earlier in the season, but as you say, that could be that the teams have figured us out. It could be that those 3 weeks just lost some cohesiveness or something. But, you know, maybe it's all turns around for the finals and something clicks and away we go.
Well, we can only...
Brisbane do the same, we'll have a home final.
We can only hope. I mean, Dale is right in that we certainly have the weapons and the history to beat everyone. I just don't feel at the moment that the way we're playing we're likely to do that, but I hope that I'm wrong. So we have a little bit more of a chat about the actual game. Good to see Mambo Italiano get a run after a presidency's worth of sitting on the sidelines. He did fine, I thought.
When you see a reserve goalkeeper start in a big game, I think everyone's always nervous, particularly in the A-League, because I think...
there's a proud history.
there's not a lot of good reserve goalkeepers out there, and I thought he did perfectly well. I don't think he could do much for the goals. People might say might have been a chance of saving the penalty, but
he got a hand on it.
He got a hand on it, but you know, you've got such a short time to react that even getting on a hand of it sometimes is a good effort.
And one thing you'd say about Smelty, I mean, there are lots of things you could say about Smelty.
Kudos.
But the one thing you would say is that the boy can strike a penalty, so you know, you can't blame Mambo for not saving it.
Yeah. We should get him in at the Phoenix because we can't strike a penalty.
Smelty. Yeah.
The funny thing about that is we sometimes on the FIFA Facebook get messages from his dad. From saying,
Italiano's, not Smelty's.
Yeah, sorry, Italiano's dad.
So, you know, Smelty's dad, if you're listening, feel free to hit us up on Facebook. we need to talk about your daughter-in-law.
Shopping here. Asking how he's playing, and he quite often wants photos and stuff. So I guess Lewis doesn't really contact his parents that much back in Perth. I think they must be missing him, sorry.
You know you're desperate as a parent when you're having to get your information about your child from Fever.
And he popped up, I think it was Friday or Saturday, saying, do you guys know the Italiano chant? And I sent him back a message saying this one and a link to the YouTube video that we have of it. And he says, yeah. And I really should have clicked what was happening then, because we hadn't heard it from him for about 6 months.
He has asked, that is about the third time he's asked us.
Yeah, he says he loves it too, apparently. So who knows where that's
I bet he doesn't.
Parental stitch up or something. And so I should have clicked it. When he messaged me, I thought, that's a bit strange. That's just a bit out of nowhere. So I should have realised that perhaps Mossy wasn't going to play in that EPO, but thought he did perfectly well. But
he's been exemplary for the reserve team, and all the senior players that I've spoken to about Italiano have said that he could start for most teams in the league. I mean, I think he's really well regarded, but seems to be the perfect 2IC, and that he's quite happy just to, you know, hang about and be Mossy's understudy until presumably Mossy gets his Zimmer frame out at some stage and hobbles off into the distance.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough gig, isn't it, being a reserve keeper?
It sort of isn't it? I mean, it's a tough gig in the sense that, yeah, you'd think that the guy probably wants to play, but then the flip side is actually a hell of a fun gig, because all you got to do is turn up to training every week, get paid reasonable money, and do the half-time show.
And fly every second week to sit on a bench.
Well, and never be a scapegoat.
Yeah, you certainly, there's not a lot of pressure on you.
No,
but he did well. No, he did superbly well. We also need to talk about the fact that Ernie's clearly a podcast listener, because finally, a short corner and a goal.
Yes.
You never score from short corners.
Well, he was quite scathing this far, Rowley, and his efforts at corners. It sounds like they've sort of tried to go down the short corner route, but...
Because they're podcast listeners, obviously.
Yeah, because the tactical genius that we are... saying that I think it was, I can't quite remember exactly what it was, but I think it says that a certain player that he wouldn't name gets into a mindset and is a bit casual and just hoists corners into the back post, which is not something that they want to do, so maybe they've gone towards a more short corner route, which I think we've said for a while is probably playing to our strengths more than smashing them into the 6 yard box, and
WeMac to climb above all, and
yeah, I mean it was well worked going. And,
it was, yeah,
and Boxy got up there and tapped it home, and it's just a shame that
maybe this is going to be us. And I'm not even joking here. Maybe this is going to be our final series secret weapon. Maybe we're going to take all of our set pieces short and bamboozle them. I kind of hope that there's something like that. That Ernie's got some tactical card in his back pocket that he's going to pull out, throw down. Whether it's, you know, maybe it's Ben Sigmund up front or. Yeah, I don't know, but short corners, we've been calling for it for ages.
I mean, people mock short corners, but I think they pop. I'd love to know stats, but I think corners in general are like 3% effective. You score 3% of them.
I can't imagine the Phoenix.
Yeah, I can't imagine short corners are any worse than that.
No, I've always taken the piss out of short corners, because you just it's so easy to press. But when you're a team like us and you're attacking, your attacking strength is mostly small, and you might as well, you know. We've got good players that can beat a press.
Yeah.
So you might as well.
Yeah. If you can play football, then why, if you back yourself to pass around play people, then why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, if we just quickly rip through the other games of the round, Brisbane Roar beat Newcastle Jets 2-1. Jets have released 9/10 of their squad, and
I think Phil Stubbins is going to kit up for them in the opening game next season.
Did you say before, Dale, they've only got 12 contracted players now?
Yeah, I think so.
Classic.
Yeah.
And then Perth Glory beat Western Sydney 2-1. Adelaide United comprehensively beat Melbourne City 4-1 in a game that probably didn't tell us much we didn't already know about Melbourne City, I don't think.
Yeah, well, Melbourne City were pretty dire in that game. They had Jallians playing at right back, who got sent off, so obviously won't be playing against us, which is good.
Great success.
Tarek Alrich scored a goal where his run started, I would say, 70 yards from goal, and beat maybe four players.
With the ball?
With the ball.
It's like you for the Nighthawks.
Mine wasn't 70 yards. And probably
yards.
Some of the defending in Camp 9 was probably a bit better than Melbourne City's. It was really bad defending. Connor Chapman got stitched up twice with no real disguise put on him. So, yeah, it's Adelaide just... Melbourne just look a wee bit out of sorts. I don't think they've won in four or five games as well. So,
sounds like us.
Yeah, a bit like us. But they're absolutely horrid away from home.
Very good. And then Central Coast went down to Melbourne Victory 3-1. So that draws to a close everyone's regular season. So Victory win the Premier's plate. Sydney 3 points adrift of them in second. Adelaide and us are equal on points, but Adelaide pipped us quite comfortably on goal difference by five, positive five. Melbourne City are way about 11 points back to fifth place, Melbourne City. And Brisbane Roar, 1 point behind them in the sixth on 34. Then you've got Perth.
on 50 points.
Same number of points as Sydney FC, but they're in seventh. Central Coast Mariners have less than half of their points in eighth on 23. Western Sydney Wanderers on 18 in ninth. And Newcastle pull up the spoon. Congratulations, Bodie. 17 points in 10th place. So, yeah, it's been a fascinating season, really, hasn't it? I mean, I would never have expected... Western Sydney Wanderers to finish second bottom, to be honest. I mean, we knew from very early on that Newcastle and Central Coast were pretty poor and likely to be pretty poor, but I would never have picked Wanderers to be down there with them.
No, I don't think most people have. I think someone rebumped the thread on the forums where there was the balls out prediction of placings, and I think just about everyone had Western Sydney sort of in the top four. I was kind of reflecting back on Sydney, actually, because you think before the Asia Cup break when they had their big rush of injuries... They were kind of down in fifth and everyone sort of, they looked sort of out of it. But in a way, I think those injuries came at a pretty good time because they had the January transfer window to restock their players and obviously come back in the second half. I think probably one of the form teams. You kind of compare that to us last year when we got all our injuries, they were towards the back half of the season. So there was no way to replace these players. They got it at a pretty good time. And if they'd happened, a month after the Asia Cup break, they'd be done. They just happen to have got them at a reasonably good time. So it's going to be interesting to see how the other game goes, I think. I think Raw might have a good chance against Adelaide.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think Adelaide are a funny old side. They're not quite flat-track bullies. I mean, they definitely can play, but they love a team that can't defend much like Melbourne City.
Yeah, I think I read that Brisbane have lost a game down in Adelaide for 11 games or something. So that's a remarkable away record if I remember that right. But I just think Adelaide have the ability to blow games where they should win a lot easier.
And Brisbane have the ability to go and rattle a team up enough to do that to them.
Right, and they've got Broich and the players that they were missing sort of in that end part of the season. You know, they had injury problems. They've got those players back. The recent form, I think they've lost a couple, but that a win on the final day will be a fill-up, and I think the two they lost are pretty close as well. So,
just to give you a flavour for how good Melbourne Victory are this year, last year Brisbane won the Premier's plate with 52 points and a goal difference of 18. This year Melbourne Victory, they've only got the one more point, but they've got a goal difference of 25. They're just stonking at scoring goals. They've scored 13 goals more in the regular season than Brisbane scored last year, and Brisbane were an attacking force last year. So... Victory pretty fearsome. And the other interesting comparisons at the other end of the table, I mean, we've finished this year in the same position as Western Sydney Wanderers. Western Sydney Wanderers have 10 fewer points this year than we had last year. We weren't actually that bad last year.
I mean, the divide this season's been massive. I think what I've been Junior 82 on the forums worked out that if we got this amount of points in previous seasons, we would have finished clear second in just about all of them. So, which kind of highlights how dire some of the teams have been and how few points they've really got. I think probably the gap between the top and the bottom is probably the biggest of, without actually looking, it's probably one of the highest ones.
It was one of the highest ones I've seen. The last time we had a finals run, we had 40 points back in 2009, 2010 when we finished fourth. So a much stronger performance from us this year with the 46, two extra W's in the W column. So yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah.
We've won 7 more games than we did last season. We've had the biggest increase in points of any other team, which is you know, a pretty good sign. I think a lot of people somehow thought that we were going to go from halfway through the season somehow come from second to last to win the whole thing, which is probably a wee bit unrealistic. But I think we're certainly heading in the right direction.
Indeed. So, all right. The other talking point from the week is the Phoenix Awards night, another comprehensive festival of drinking hosted by the Wellnicks. And thank you to Henry Tate for sponsoring our alcoholism and getting us along for the ride. It was another bloody good fun night out. We've been to a few of these now, and there were some predictable award winners. And Table 22 was in very good form down the back of it. It was quite funny that they placed us. We were as far from the stage as you could possibly get.
But closest to the bar.
Closest to the bar and closest to the door.
Yes.
So, you know, it was well thought through, I thought, from them. Very well organised.
They know us well.
And as far as possible from the social media screen, not that that stopped
us. Yeah. No, it was heaps of good fun. Dale, have you got the award winners there?
Yeah, I do. The under 23 player was voted on by fans, it's quite a strong list when you look at it. I mean, Rolly Bonavazia, who everyone seems to think who's like 28 or 29, has turned 23 this season, which as long as we keep him around for a few years is pretty something.
Young.
he's pretty young, but I hope if we can keep him around for a few years, it should be quite good because he's clearly hasn't even reached his peak yet. Yeah.
You never know.
Well, no. And I think that's something we forget about. I mean, Alex Rodriguez is only 21 too. They're still young players and still learning their trades. So as long as we can keep him for a few years, we should get the best out of them. So, Rolly, took out the under 23 award, which I think, I don't think anyone could question that, one bit. The Golden Boot winner obviously went to Nathan Burns, I think 13. I think he was maybe 3 ahead of Krishna, maybe 4 ahead of Krishna. And then he also cleaned up the Players Player of the Year and the Player of the Year, which is the one where the coaching staff vote after each game. He was quite a clear leader, I think. Was it Riera second and Bonavazia third from memory?
Yeah, I think that was right. Burns opened up a massive lead at the start of the year, and then got chased down a bit, but finished ahead.
Yep, and goal of the year went to Roy Krishna's Thunderbolt against Newcastle. I was a little bit surprised by that. It beat out Bonavazia's free kick against Victory, Hicks's free kick against Newcastle, and Nathan Burns's goal against Sydney, where he beat two or three players in that away game that we won 2-0. A little bit surprised by that, but it was voted by fans as well, so perhaps understandable. Not a bad nudge. But against Newcastle, so yeah, should be worth half goals there.
Yeah. In slightly less formal news, there were rumours were running rife around the room that both Hicks and Cunningham have been told that their number's up and they're not going to be required next season. Neither of them, I didn't spot either of them crying into their very tasty dessert platter, but. Yeah, it'd be interesting if that's... I'd be really sad to see Hicks go. I think Hicks has been good, apart from the ripper free kick that he scored out at the Hutt Rec. I think he's, you know, promising, but I don't... Yeah, we hardly ever get to see him, so who knows?
Are you still promising at 26, 27?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I think that's probably the big thing.
I forget that he's that old.
Yeah, I think if he was, you know, 22, 23, you'd be like, shit. But if you haven't quite broken into... by then you're probably not going to.
I think that on balance they've probably looked at it and said there are some kids in the academy that we can bring into youth spots that perhaps, you know, have the potential to be as good or better. Let's invest in the future maybe. And that's unlucky for Hicks because, as you say, he's Hicks has proven to be a perfectly competent A-League player when we've seen him, so it's probably a little harsh on him. I hope he finds another gig somewhere.
Yeah, me too.
You know, worst case, he'll probably end up in midfield for Auckland City and be earning more than he was at the Phoenix.
Yeah, quite so.
For coaching.
All coaching. Cunningham is he's an interesting one, isn't he? I mean, he's always been criticised by us for being perennially offside, but... you know, he certainly has made a contribution this season.
Yeah, I don't think you can dismiss his commitment, I think. He looks like he always gives a shit. which is something you always...
He's got great lunatic eyes.
Oh, man, he's got the best crazy eyes. But, I mean, you think about it, I mean, he came last season and had to do a job in midfield, which I don't think he was, you know, natural to, and did a pretty decent job there. And, you know, he works hard. He may just do that bit of work a bit too early, so he breaks the offside line. But I think the problem is he's a foreign spot, and, you know, he's been a little bit of a bit part player, and you kind of really need them to be... You know, you need to be moulding your teams around your foreign players. So I think that's probably one. I think his wife and his family went home 8 months ago, and that's probably another. He's probably more than happy to go back to Costa Rica. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those players where you kind of go, oh, well, that's kind of, it's kind of sad to see him go, even though you kind of know it's for the best. You can't, you don't just dismiss and go, eh, toodaloo, like perhaps Tyler Boyd.
He was looking very bored at the awards ceremony, and when Ernie was speaking, he was chatting to his girlfriend,
probably wishing he was at 50 Shades.
Yeah, or at home with his girlfriend.
Maybe they were just, that's what they were discussing.
Maybe they were. I wonder which scene they were reenacting when they got home.
I haven't seen any, so I couldn't possibly comment.
Well, moving swiftly along, outside of Phoenix Land, sounds like Ramon Tribuliech might be off to Brisbane Roar, and that prompted possibly the tweet of the week that I saw, which was someone from Australia saying if Fox Sports commentators can't pronounce a name like Miller, how are they going to pronounce a name like Tribuliech? Which is a fair point. It sounds like it might be quite close to a done deal, but no one wants to say it.
Yeah, and the rumours are strong, and obviously the grapevine to Auckland's not the weakest grapevine. So sounds like it's pretty close. I suspect they probably won't announce it until after Brisbane get knocked out, for respect to the current coach.
/ director of football.
Well, yeah, he might not even last that long.
That'd be the shortest appointment ever, wouldn't it? I mean, that'd be great for Triple H. I mean, he's, for all we give Auckland City boundless amounts of shit, which they deserve, he is well-respected coach. Done superbly well with admittedly rich player resources for the league that he's in, but in particular when they've gone to the Club World Cup, they've done really, really well, and you can only really put that down to him, I think. So good to see him getting an opportunity to step up to an officially professional league.
He can't do much more here, can he?
No. Disappointing maybe that he hasn't been involved. I mean, I know he applied for the All Whites job and missed out, but disappointing that he hasn't been involved at national team level somewhere. It seems like he's got the credentials and the right style of play. But
did he ever play in English football? Probably not. So he's probably
Is he a doesn't meet the Martin captain? No,
doesn't really meet the Martin.
No,
Hudson sort of
wrong accent. Eh?
Yeah,
it's a good point. Yeah, that's a fair point.
The old woolly jumper that he wears. Yeah, on the touchline, that ain't going to fit in at Brisbane.
No, he's going to have to really if he's really committed to it, he's going to have to just. You know, he's going to have to sweat through, really.
In Brisbane humidity, that's...
Or do you reckon he'll go? I reckon he'll probably just go the rolled-up shirt sleeves, no tie. I reckon. Still with the trousers.
Yeah, he doesn't mind the old the suit.
The suit's going to be just as bad in the heat.
Oh, you reckon? I reckon Woolly jumps way worse, surely.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Your suits are made of polyester, though. So they're
sorry.
I reckon he'll just go the shirt with the sleeves rolled up, maybe. Or the polo, perhaps.
Doesn't strike me as a polo man.
No. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see anyway, isn't it? Not really. Will he go the logo on the shirt, on the collar, or not on the collar? They went the logo on the collar at the awards night, having found a couple of Phoenix stickers.
But some people thought that was real. I thought that must be pretty decent stickers if they look like that.
They looked good in the photograph.
Yeah.
It just goes to show.
Shame about the head.
Photoshop. Easter Island statue with Phoenix. Anyway, so we move on to this weekend and elimination semi-final time. I've heard a lot of people calling them quarterfinals, which is not strictly speaking accurate. Elimination final time and possibly the .worst.game.time.ever. 7 o'clock on a Sunday, but yeah, never mind. Melbourne City come over here with, Jaylen's missing, a pretty shit travelling record. Do we have the wherewithal to take him to the cleaners and get our finals run on track?
You don't like to...
Come on.
I am the most superstitious person in the Fever, and I feel, you know, there's no reason we shouldn't beat them. They've parked the bus on us a bit this year, but we are, man for man, a better team.
They're not very good at bus parking, though, it has to be said. They finished a full 10 points adrift of us in the season. You know, we had... We've had good results against them. We shouldn't really fear them, but it's just that first 15 minutes for me. Can we not concede a shit goal in the first quarter hour?
They park a big bus against us and kick the living crap out of us, and they've done that a couple of times this season.
Although, having said that, that game was it 3 or 4 weeks ago was very open, and probably could finish 4-4 if someone could finish a cheese sandwich. They've kind of changed their midfield a wee bit, and it's left them a wee bit more exposed down the fullbacks, which should play into our hands. Assuming they do the same, I think it should be a pretty open game, and you'd like to think that the bouncer probabilities would have more firepower than them. But as they say, it's finals football, and anything can happen.
Bazinga. The TAB certainly fancy us. They've got us at $2 and Melbourne City at $3.40. So they certainly see us as strong favourites going in here. The other game this weekend is Brisbane Roar v Adelaide United, and they've got Adelaide United at strong favourites here. $1.80 to Brisbane Roar's $4.20. Now, when Dale talks about Brisbane Roar and having the ability to go and turn Adelaide over, I reckon it's a wee dabble right there.
That is very long odds for
tasty money for a Brisbane game.
Yeah. Remembering that there's also two progress odds as well, so that one there's the three option with the draw included. But both those games have two progress odds, which obviously will be a little shorter, but I think you'll probably find you've got $2.40-ish Brisbane.
No, $2.90.
Is it? And we're $2.35 or $2.40 or something like that?
Well, two progress might be a bit longer for us, given our penalty-taking abilities.
Yeah, we're $1.50 to City's $2.45. To progress.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So that's the difference in the obviously the ordinary time result odds and the going through at the end of the game odds. Interesting stuff. Good to see us strong favourites.
Be interesting if the TAB completely switched those odds if it goes to penalties. The further into the game it gets, the odds switch in favour.
Yeah, live betting could be the way to go with this one.
Maybe that's part of it's a long term strategy. Yeah. To make Melbourne play for penalties, and then suddenly we're actually quite good at them, but we've missed them on purpose.
Nice. I see what you've done. Well, we've gone out for almost our last overseas interview of the season. Not quite. Well, maybe. No, probably not. But we've talked to David Hards from Melbourne City, and Dale got on the phone with him today.
Welcome back, David. Thanks for coming on board and taking some time out again.
No worries. Good to be here, as always.
I guess after round 27, you guys are in fifth place. Going into the season, is that an acceptable position? Is that kind of where you thought you'd be? How has you assess the season so far?
Probably at the start of the season, I was hoping for probably a home final, so top four, but making the finals is always good. The situation with Perth has bumped us up a spot, so yeah, fifth probably reflects our season, but all in all, it's probably a little bit disappointing how we ended the last 2 weeks too, so we've been pretty ordinary.
Like you say, a bit like the Phoenix, your form's been a bit indifferent heading into the finals. Why do you think that's the case?
I think it's just the fact that our inability to play away. We seem to go to water every time we hit the airport. So I can't put my finger on it, but the last three seasons have been terrible away. So it's showing that the club needs to progress and in the off-season it really needs to improve.
Last weekend against Adelaide, they, I guess, gave you a little bit of a lesson. Is that a bit of concern going into this weekend?
Yeah, it's a big concern. We got a huge touch-up from Adelaide last week, who were missing most of their midfield. So it's a massive concern for us. We need to really regroup this week and even get on the same park as you guys. So 4-1 drubbing was probably a good reality check for us and, in a sense, where we really are against the top four or five sides.
And Jadians was obviously sent off playing at right back. How do you think Van Schip will juggle the squad this weekend?
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. We might see maybe Hoffman switch sides, and we might see Ramsey come in, which weakens us even more. So we've got Chapman and Cusnorbo probably playing central back. Chapman's been terrible since he was playing really well. He had that incident with the ref, missed 4 weeks of football, and he's a completely different player now. He's lost all his confidence, making schoolboy errors out the back. So it's not looking good for us down the back.
Is the fullbacks the main concern for you guys?
Yeah, definitely. We need to get some drive out of that. But Ramsey and Hoffman, if they do play there, they don't offer the team much. They probably go forward a bit too much for my liking and don't give defensive cover. So we could leak a few goals from the flanks there.
I mean, the game that we played against you guys, I guess, was it like a month or so ago, was pretty open and end to end contest. Do you think that'll be the same strategy from you guys, or do you think Van Schaik will try maybe be a bit more defensive and look to sort of take the game as long, you know, deep into extra time if possible?
I reckon it'll probably be an open game. We've played open game most of the time. That game, Glenn Moss was pretty phenomenal that game, so we probably were unlucky enough to walk away with a result, but it's a bit of a different squad this time, so I think an open game, if we score early, like we normally try to, we might close the game up a little bit, but I reckon we might see some extra time this weekend.
Is that your expectation, or is that kind of your hope?
More of a hope, really. I've just got to just hope that we go out there and have a crack, and we're playing against the quality side of you guys, and our confidence will be pretty low, I reckon, so...
And what about the rest of your squad? Apart from Jallians, is there anyone else who's sort of missing or you know, doubtful for this weekend?
Malling's out. He's out for the season now. And we've lost Satuani, our Singapore international, so we've lost those two. I don't think we're going to get much back in, so we could be seeing a relatively skinny squad from us, so we rely on Moy, and Robbie Corrin's probably going to deliver something that he hasn't really done much this season, so we need him. He's probably the key... Robbie Corrin, Moy, and Josh Kennedy, who's looked very lost up front in our setup.
All right, cool. Well, thank you very much for your time. I won't wish you too much luck this Sunday, but hopefully you enjoy the game over there in Melbourne.
No, understandable. It'll be a nice Sunday evening game, very late for you guys over there. So good luck to you guys, and I'll probably speak to you next season.
There you are, David Hards, Dale managing to dig up a Melbourne City fan in Melbourne. It's good to see. Yes, so very best of luck to the Knicks boys this weekend. It's going to be huge. Make sure you get yourself down there nice and early. I think the fight's on, the Pacquiao Mayweather fight's on earlier in the afternoon. If you fancy a Sunday afternoon of concerted drinking, then get yourself down nice and early. Otherwise, your game's at 7 o'clock, and we'll be there in the zone. In the meantime, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back shortly with a brand new and exciting mystery segment. All right, here. Welcome to the new and exciting Sam Malkinson special section.
Sam Malkinson quotes. It's not 1982. He don't have a clue. Sam Malkinson quotes. He thinks that he can write, but he's pretty shite.
We just couldn't resist having a special segment for a football writer, that the Sunday News described as an all whites legend, offering the best coverage of the game in their Qantas Award-winning sports section of the year.
What? Really?
In 2008, when they re-signed him ahead of the World Cup, along with Danny Hay, they announced that he was nothing but the best for football fans again this season in the Sunday News. Okay. So he obviously deserving of his own segment on our you know, obviously second rate and poorly listened to and soon to be finished podcast. Sorry, Sam, we should have done this a long time ago, but it's hard to keep up with the endless shit that you spout. The motivation for this segment was the magnificently thought-through tactical analysis that Sam posted on Friday night ahead of our game against Sydney. It was just too good to be ignored, really, from one perspective. Dale, do you want to run us through it?
I would, but I'm not sure where to start.
It's hard, isn't it?
I think the premise of his article is that, well, that the Phoenix are good, but they just need a tiny little bit of fine tuning to make sure that they're the best.
And if you were to, the other thing I like is that he said that they are favourites to win the league,
along with
Melbourne Victory.
Yeah, not true.
Yeah. No bookie
has ever had us favourites alongside.
I find that hard to believe. I like his commitment though. He's obviously a Phoenix man.
Yes. And given that,
his fine tuning takes the form of, would you characterise it as a tweak or a wholesale change?
I would call it an overhaul.
An overhaul?
So probably the opposite of fine-tuning.
Yeah. So he said here, and I quote, "I do believe that some Phoenix fine-tuning is needed when playing against the league's leading teams," of which obviously Sydney were one.
The formation that he wants is is Jura as a sweeper.
Oh, it's a sweeper-stopper system?
Yeah.
It's a four at the back?
No. Well, it's a 1-2-1-4-1-1 formation.
Shit.
Which I've never seen in my life, so maybe it's revolutionary. But
so it's a 3-5-2. sort of.
Kind of, yeah. So Jura sweeping, Boxall and Sigmund as centre backs, and then Riera as the holding midfielder in front, and then a flat midfield four with Rodriguez on the left side.
Alex Rodriguez is a left winger. With a fullback behind him?
No,
and down all day. Just up and down. Day, yeah.
And I mean, he has the pace for that. No, wait, no, he
no,
does
he's
not.
Quite slow. Yeah. Is he lefty?
No.
Okay.
Well, we don't have any of those anyway.
And as he's quite good on the ball, you just kind of want to put him in a spot where he's, you know, having to cover large areas, pick up the ball and
get down the touchline.
Yeah.
And then to the right of him would be Bonavacia, which, yeah, I can respect that. And Leon next to him. Yep, that seemed right. And then Louis Fenton at the right midfield. But okay, I'll give you that. And then in front of the four is McGlinchey, I guess, playing as a 10. And then Nathan Burns as the 9. So that's
Lone striker. Yeah. Holding the ball up, back to goal.
And the Rory Fallon.
That's the 4-1-1 formation. I mean, and the premise is that, you know, our weakest spot are fullbacks. So therefore he's clearly
we should play with none.
Let's just not play with any. Therefore that can't be our weakness because we have none. So it must be our strengths. We're so good at them, we've just got rid of them.
It is perplexing. It is perplexing. I've tried to go back and find some of the finest quotes of Sam Malcolmson, but there are really just too many to choose from. However, I did dig out, and I'm going to put this in here for the sake of balance. I did dig out a quote of his that I totally agree with in an article written by Tony Smith, where Sam Malcolmson slammed New Zealand football's lack of transparency over the review into the World Cup qualifying series failure. And that I can entirely get behind. His tactical analysis leaves a little bit, I think, wanting.
I think the other thing I quite like is his comment on Louis Fenton that he has a lot of skill and ability and is exciting when going forward. He's been crucified at fullback because of his lack of pace. Now, that would be the same Louis Fenton who is in the top three fastest Phoenix players.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he doesn't like to concentrate on facts. It's all about really opinions.
And what he feels in his bones, which is a line he uses.
Yes, and we quote at the end, and here's a Phoenix man as we say, I really feel it in my bones that this team has the ability. Now they need the belief that they can win the A-League title and bring it back to Wellington.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
Give me whatever he is having, because that shit
that shit sounds unreal.
Yeah.
We'll be back hopefully with more of Sam Malcolmson next week. In the meantime, we're going to take a break and resume the normal podcast run of events by talking about New Zealand football. New Zealand football time, and we probably should have just mushed this all together in a journalism segment in the middle, shouldn't we? Really, but Andrew Gordy took to Anthony Hudson in an interview during last week, I think, wasn't it? Where he tried to nail Hudson down on the sacking of Jose and Paul Temple. What I think is probably one of the finest television interviews in football in New Zealand I can recall. In fact, possibly one of the only good television interviews of someone in football. I would not be surprised in the slightest if Gordy gets blacklisted from New Zealand football media for a little while for asking actual serious questions of people who have to make actual serious decisions. But good on you, Gordy. You know, round of applause from the pod here. The Hudson didn't really cover himself in glory, I didn't think. He sort of sidestepped the genuine questions. He did cop to the fact that he thought that that Hay and Zoricic were a better coaching team. And I suppose that's an opinion that, that he's entitled to have and he'll now have to live by. But he certainly wasn't going to be drawn on many of the other things that Gordy was keen to ask him. It was a fascinating watch, eh?
Yeah, but the good news is that Hay and Zoricic are aligned though, so, you know, I think that's the key message here.
There was a lot of discussion of alignment.
Actually, maybe our new match day hashtag for football games.
Well, no, it'd be for youth games. Hashtag aligned. Yeah, for the under-17 World Cup. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, yeah, if you haven't seen the full 20-minute interview is on TV3's website, and Andrew is to be commended for making it happen. He had to be dogged to even get the interview. New Zealand Football said no, and then said no again, and then said no some more, and then offered him Fred, and then said no again, and
right?
eventually he came out from under his rock. So
that's usually a sign that you're not comfortable
absolutely
in what you might have to be saying. Yeah. Or what you might be asked. he certainly sidestepped around some issues, and he's got a good ability to say something that means nothing.
Yes, he's very good at the nothing statement,
yeah,
isn't he? Yeah. Much like your statements earlier on about the Phoenix being third, and that's where they should be.
Yes, but I'm not a national football coach.
But you are a man to whom podcast listeners turn for opinions.
Have I aligned to the official statement of the In The Zone podcast?
Yes, I think you have. Yes, I think we're aligned. Anyway, back to actual serious football. The under-20s have announced some pre-World Cup friendlies.
Yeah, there's a whole host of them going mostly in the Waikato in Auckland region. I think they end up starting, I think, maybe, is it next week? I think May 3rd they play Australia at North Harbour Stadium at 7 p.m. I think for these there's a gold coin entry. So if you're having to be a listener up north, try to get along to these. They also play Panama on the 7th. On the 7th, Qatar 3 days later in Waikato Stadium on the 10th. On the 21st, they play Honduras in Warkworth.
Wow.
I have no idea there's a football ground in Warkworth, but on the 24th of May, Austria at a to-be-confirmed venue. There's a whole bunch of other games involving those other teams playing each other as well. So jump online on the New Zealand Football website. There's a link to all those. They're all gold coin donations, so get along to have a look at those. Should be some good sort of build-up games if you've got the time to attend.
Indeed so. And Team Wellington missed out narrowly, oh so narrowly, against Auckland City in the O-League final. It was fantastic to be able to watch it at Bethel Woods at the Phoenix aftermatch. But not quite the result the T-Dubs boys were after, going down on penalties after Lewis Corrales and someone else missed their penalty.
Ian Hogg did.
Ian Hogg, the Hog Dog. Big Mike O'Keefe saved one. Magnificent. But wasn't enough.
Penalties didn't really go well for Wellington teams at the weekend, did they?
No, indeed. The game itself was fiery, I think it's fair to say. Auckland City playing the majority of the football, Team Wellington putting themselves about. And there were at least a couple of flare-ups in the game, and then pretty much an all-in brawl on the full-time whistle.
They didn't exactly cover themselves in glory.
Neither team, as we said.
I guess the interesting bits happened when I think it was Bale got sent off, and it was a case of mistaken identity. What led to there was a goal. Was there a penalty? Was it at the end of full time or near the end of extra time? Might have been near the end of extra time.
Yeah, it was the equaliser from Ian Hogg, the left foot ripper from the edge of the box, was about 10 to go.
Remember, Auckland City got awarded a penalty, I think, in extra time for a handball that looked very dubious. They then sent off Chris Bale, I think, as a case of mistaken identity, who unleashed a tirade of abuse to any match official within the 50-yard vicinity. So that was not a particularly good look. Anyway, O'Keefe saved it, went to penalties, and they eventually lost, and there was some kind of bust-up near halfway afterwards. So it's not exactly the prettiest of sights, really. Sometimes you've just got to take your medicine and be the bigger person, really.
Yeah, if a friend of the pods who was involved at OFC referred to it as a disgrace and the most embarrassing thing he's ever seen. So that was an interesting insight into what it was like live.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what happened at the halfway circle that caused the bust up, because it was after the winning goal, the winning penalty, and I can't remember who the striker was, but he went down on his knees to celebrate, and then I think maybe after like 2 or 3 seconds, he just got up and started running towards the centre circle, and I thought, oh, that's a bit weird, and then they panned to a wide shot of just us all in like handbags. It's okay.
Yeah.
So I think someone must have kicked that off, but
indeed.
Someone called for them to clear the benches, and yeah. I mean, like a baseball all in.
There's a few in that T-Dubs side that wouldn't mind a
wee bit of fisticuffs.
Yeah.
And particularly fisticuffs against
their old team.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got some grief from Striker on Twitter when I tweeted that Auckland City A had defeated Auckland City B on penalties. I got a sarcastic strike from sarcastic tweet from at Team Wellington thanking me for my support. Which kind of sums up the mood of the camp, I suppose, doesn't it? Well, maybe I was being rude. I don't know. The upshot is that Auckland City are off to the Club World Cup again and get another financial windfall, and T-Dubs are left to lick their wounds and their rubber checkbook and come back to Wellington to try and fill the bank account up again. I think it's been tough financially for Team Wellington to put out the team that they did for the period of time that you have to be away over there. So It's going to be interesting to see whether that has any ongoing effects on the Team Wellington organisation and indeed Miramar Rangers that underpins it.
The good news, though, is that the flights back will be cheaper because most of them only have to go to Auckland. They don't have to carry on to Wellington.
Zing! Watch out, Striker will tweet at you too. Back down in grassroots land, the Lotto Men's Central League continues to throw up pretty interesting results. At the weekend, Wellington Olympic got pumped by Napier City Rovers. Napier City Rovers flying high atop the table. Palmerston North Maris got palmed by Western Suburbs. 8-1 the result there, including a Chang hat-trick. Western Suburbs are second. Petone had a 1-1 draw with Miramar Rangers. Those guys are sort of battling it out for mid-table mediocrity. And Tawa lost the battle of the bottom. Oh, actually not quite. It's a bit unfair. It's a bit unfair to Lower Hutt. Lower Hutt beat them 2-1 after Tawa were 1-0 up with about 10 to go, I think. So, great 3 points for Lower Hutt there. Some would argue it was a Rello 6-pointer this early in the season. But Tawa adrift of the table on 0 at the bottom. Really looking in a bit of trouble. They've already got a goal difference of minus 17 after just 5 games.
Ooh.
They've conceded 20, so an average of 4 a game so far. So tough times. I think they're back at a relayed Redwood Park now, which I've heard is almost as bad as the old one.
Good math, by the way, there, Smith. Impressed.
Thank you very much. Wairarapa United, what you guys don't know is that we had to stop the pod for 15 minutes while we got did a long division.
Carry the wire.
Exactly. I've gone through three pencils and a roll of laundry.
And the outtakes of you getting it wrong are going to be at the end of this podcast.
settle in. Wairarapa United, they beat Stop Out 3-2. It would appear they don't have a manager, though, because it doesn't say who scored the goals for them. So I suspect they didn't submit their team card. Sort your shit out, Ives.
Yeah, I was going to say, their manager's pretty average.
That's it, right. So that leaves Napier City, as I said, at the top of the table. Western Suburbs and Wairarapa are equal behind. Them just 3 points back, and then there's a big gap back to fourth. So Petone are on 7, then a whole bunch of teams on 6. Miramar Rangers are on 4, and Tawa are on 0. You can only see Miramar Rangers getting stronger as they get some players back from Team Wellington. So it could be out of maybe Tawa, Palmy North Marist, and Lower Hutt for the bottom sort of few spots there. I think Wellington Olympic stopouts seem to have started really well. You never quite know how the promoted team's going to go. They've started firmly, but could run out of gas. Who knows? But interesting in the Central League this weekend. If you want to get out and watch some Central League action, Western Suburbs are at home to Petone on Saturday at 2:30 at Endeavour One. Stopout are at home to Palmerston North Marist on Saturday at 2:30 at Hutt Park. Tawa are at home to Miramar Rangers back at Redwood Park. The return to Redwood, and that is a battle of the bottom too. So there's a bit on that game. And then on Sunday at 1:00, Lower Hutt City are at their new Fraser Park turf against Wellington Olympic. Could be a game with a bit of spice, I reckon. And then on Sunday, if you're in Napier. Coops, Napier City Rovers at home to Wairarapa United. Wairarapa United are a pretty good side, and Napier top of the league. So that'll be one to watch if you're not able to get permission to come down here for the Phoenix game at 7:00. Coops. And that's pretty much all we've got time for today. Pod number 164 draws to a close. No Boxy, obviously, this week. He's away working, but I think next week we'll be back with a full complement of pod and hopefully another finals game to talk about. Until then, cheerio from us.